morning. This is the clerk of the court, Greg Block, confirming procedures for the oral argument scheduled to be conducted by teleconference this morning. If arguing counsel or a judge drops from this teleconference, we will pause the proceedings and clock until the judge and or counsel is reconnected. In accordance with the instructions we previously provided counsel, we will ring a chime that sounds like this. I'm not hearing that. Don, are you on the line? There we go. That's a chime with 3 minutes remaining and a bell that sounds like this. When counsel's total allotted time expires. Arguing counsel in this case are on the call. Mr. Michael Just, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And Ms. Amanda Radke, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. Please stand by. We'll confirm judges are on the call. Our presiding judge this morning is Chief Judge Bartley. Did you hear both counsel, Chief Judge Bartley, and can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you and I hear both counsel.
Thank you. And Judge Greenberg, did you hear both counsel and can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. And Judge Meredith, did you hear both counsel and can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Chief Judge Bartley, the call is configured and all participants are now ready to proceed.
Very good, Mr. Block. You may call the court to order.
The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via teleconference by Judge Greenberg and Judge Meredith. We're here today for the matter of Kleeman Bryant versus Ronald Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 18-92. And the issue before us is whether the board violates the claimant's constitutional right to due process or to fair process when, in accordance with section 20.1304A, it issues a decision fewer than 90 days after an appeal has been certified to the board. Counsel for the parties, would you please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel?
Thank you. Michael Just for the appellant, Kleeman Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Just. And
good morning,
Secretary.
Good morning, Your Honor. Amanda Radke and Joan Moriarty for the Secretary.
Thank you, Ms. Radke. As you know, each party will have 30 minutes to present their argument. Mr. Just, do you want to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, 10 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Okay, that's fine. We will make that happen. Mr. Just, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. 38 CFR 20.1304A provides that a veteran will be granted a period of 90 days following the mailing of notice that an appeal has been certified to the board or until the date the appellate decision is promulgated by the Board of Veterans Appeals, whichever comes first, during which they may submit additional evidence and argument, a request for a personal hearing, or a request for a change in representation. The clause, or until the date the appellate decision is promulgated by the Board of Veterans Appeals, whichever comes first, is capricious and offers nothing more than an illusory opportunity for a veteran to submit additional evidence and argument in support of their claim. In this case, the veteran's representative notified VA in April 2017 that further argument would be advanced once the board sent the 90-day letter. On September 21st, 2017, the board mailed such notice to the veteran and his representative of his right to submit additional evidence and argument within the 90 days. Nonetheless, the board issued its decision in November 2017 prior to the expiration of the 90-day period. The board deprived the veteran of his right to have additional evidence and argument submitted on his behalf within the 90-day period, even though VA was put on express notice that such further argument would be advanced by his representative once the board sent the 90-day letter.
This is Judge Greenberg. Do you think it makes a difference whether you advised the board that you intended or wanted to reserve your right to submit something additional?
Thank you, Judge Greenberg. I do not think that makes a difference for purposes of whether or not that clause under 20.1304A violates the notice requirements and a veteran's due process. Of course, for our purposes here, the board was in fact placed on notice that further argument would be advanced. However, if the circumstances were different and a veteran or his or her representative did not expressly state that further argument would be advanced, again, that still would not sort of that would not dismiss the notice deficiencies under 20.1304A, because as written, the veteran and his or her representative have absolutely no idea when their time is up to submit such evidence and argument.
And so, you're, Mr. Just, you're making a facial challenge to 20.1304A?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you also making an as-applied challenge, given that you did focus in your intro on the fact here that he had on his Form 9 indicated that he had additional argument?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely as well, because in this case, as you noted and as I discussed in my introduction, here, the board was actually placed on notice that further evidence and argument would be advanced, but nonetheless proceeded to issue its decision without affording the veteran's representative that opportunity.
Uh-huh. And what argument would the veteran have submitted to the board if he had had the full 90 days?
I have conferred with the representative who was representing Mr. Bryant at the VA level. And Mr. Percivelli informed me that he was prepared to submit some favorable nexus evidence linking colon cancer to contaminated water at Camp Lejeune, as well as some written arguments regarding the lump issues from the left side of the head and the middle breast area.
So he was prepared to submit evidence as well as argument, is what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is Judge Meredith. Could I just clarify, are you suggesting that there is evidence, existing evidence, that the appellant could have submitted in the remaining 20 days of the 90-day period?
Yes, Your Honor. That is what I have been informed. The veteran's representative informed me that they were prepared to advance that evidence and argument within that 90-day window, which is why they had put the board on notice that they were planning and intending on doing so.
I don't believe you mentioned that in either of your briefs before. Is that something you believe is necessary to show harm here, that there was evidence or argument that would have been submitted?
Well, certainly, and the court discussed this in the Clark case, the court found there that given the assertion that the appellant may have submitted evidence or argument to the board, had he been given the full 90-day period, the court found that that was sufficient to demonstrate prejudicial error. And here, of course, the representative affirmatively expressed and notified the board that such evidence and argument would be advanced. It wasn't until preparing for this oral argument that I reached out to the representative to ask if there was in fact such evidence and argument that was being prepared and what that was going to entail.
This is Judge Greenberg again. Isn't the more compelling argument that on its face this regulation is unconstitutional, as violating due process? I think you cite Mullane. I haven't seen that since law school, but that really deals with due process and notice requirements in state courts. Are you you're relying on that more as an analogy, I assume, to the argument that you're making, that on its face, this regulation denies due process? No one has any idea when the board is going to make its decision, and you're sort of rolling the dice. Rolling the dice doesn't seem to be a matter of constitutional fairness. Is that your argument?
Yes, Judge Greenberg, absolutely. And if I may, we can take a step back and examine 38 CFR 19.36, which is sort of the springboard, if you will, into 20.1304A. And under that regulation, the Department of Veterans Affairs recognizes that it is essential that the appellant, the veteran and his or her representative, be notified in writing of the time limit to submit additional evidence and argument, a change in representation or request for a hearing. So as written, 20.1304A essentially renders section 19.36 moot, because in effect, the board can issue a decision concurrently with such notice, hence giving no notice at all. And that, of course, would be fundamentally unfair, because 20.1304A has no meaning whatsoever if the board can deny the appellant's claim simultaneous with giving notice of 90 days for the veteran to submit additional evidence.
Well, what if the secretary or the board sent notice to the veteran, in this case your client, and said, look, we're about to issue an opinion, or we're about to make a decision. Do you have it? We're within the 90 days. You haven't submitted anything. We're about to issue our opinion. Do you have anything more to submit? What would your answer be as to the due process argument there?
Well, certainly, and this has been recognized in the court's previous cases in Williams and Kucharowski, when the court has dealt with the 90-day period on remands from the court. That 90-day period can be waived if there is an express waiver of the 90-day period. For example, if there's a situation, as you articulated, where the board, where the veteran or his or her representative expressly informs the board that there is no more evidence and argument that they would like to submit, and there was nothing further, and the board may proceed to issue its decision prior to the expiration of the 90-day period, that would certainly alleviate any due process or notice concerns or concerns of fundamental fairness. So, of course, absent an express waiver of that period, then the 90-day window and a date certain is absolutely essential, so the veteran and his or her representative knows when their clock runs out.
Well, what about the – I guess it's more appropriate to ask the secretary, but what if you took the – what if we took the position that this is a merely gratuitous statement, shall we say, by the secretary in adopting this regulation? Look, you've got 90 days, but the hammer may fall on you in the form of a board decision any time during that 90 days. So you're taking your chance if you don't get it in within the 90-day period. What's wrong with that?
Well, then that would constitute no notice at all, because essentially what the board is saying in that circumstance is, we're going to issue a decision. You have 90 days or you don't. And literally the very next second, that board decision could come through in the mail and the time is up. So again, if there's no notice of a date certain, then that constitutes no notice at all. Because as stated before, as written, the board is able to deny the claim simultaneous with providing the, quote, 90-day notice of the time limit to submit additional evidence.
And, well, do you know anything about the reasoning behind this regulation? Again, I could ask the secretary, but do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, what's the point of this regulation?
Well, again, I think if you step back and look at 38 CFR 19.36, that recognizes that it is essential to notify a claimant and his or her representative in writing of the time limit remaining on their appeal. So that's the meaning behind this, is that the system recognizes, and 19.36 recognizes, that it is absolutely essential in the VA claims process, especially given it's a non-adversarial process, and pro-veteran and VA's goal is not to win but to ensure that justice is done. It's essential that time limit be put in writing. So again, I believe that as 20.1304A, that clause is written, it renders 19.36 and the entire meaning behind that regulation moot.
I understand.
Judge Meredith. Judge Greenberg, did you want to go?
Oh, no.
Okay, this is Judge Meredith. In assessing the constitutionality here, are you asking us to look solely at 20.1304 and what happens in the period after certification and not look at any notice and opportunity to be heard that happened since the claim was initially denied in 2014?
Yes, Your Honor. So here, 20.1304, you are correct, it just deals with that post-certification period. So whether a claim has been pending for 20 years, 10 years, or 2 years, there still has to be a date certain of the time limit for submitting additional evidence and argument. Again, looking at 19.36, it recognizes that it is essential to provide that notice to the veteran and his or her representative. But if, as written, 20.1304A really puts quite the kink in that time limit requirement under 19.36, rendering it moot. Because again, if that 90-day period can be stopped at any time, literally within the first minute that the 90-day period commences, then that constitutes no notice at all. And certainly that would violate all notions of fairness and opportunity to be heard, because deficient notice really constitutes no notice whatsoever. So as written, the rule is entirely arbitrary, and it's quite frankly irrational, because it defies logic that 20.1304A would require the VA to provide notice that constitutes no notice at all.
Mr. Justice, this is Judge Bartley. Can you take us through very quickly each of the Matthews v. Eldridge factors? And because the Secretary had some arguments, of course, about why you were wrong as to your due process challenge. And I'm wondering how you would respond to that.
Yes, of course, Chief Judge. So under the first Matthews factor, whether there is a private interest affected by government action, here Mr. Bryant's private interest is in the receipt of his disability benefits, which the Federal Circuit has recognized are non-discretionary, statutorily mandated benefits. Under the second factor,
this is Judge Bartley again. On that factor, I believe that the Secretary cited to Devlin versus OPM. That was a case where the Federal Circuit, I think, had kind of corralled Cushman a little bit.
Yes, and well, the court has recognized as recently as 2016 in Noah v. McDonald that entitlement to VA compensation benefits is a substantial interest, which weighs heavily in favor of ensuring that an eligible veteran receives such benefits and receives accurate decisions. This property interest has also been, as I said, recognized in this court and across other circuits as well. Every circuit to address this question, this is cited in Capps v. Wing in the Second Circuit, has concluded that applicants for benefits, no less the benefit recipients, possess a property interest in the receipt of public welfare entitlements. So I think, again, it's fairly clear in my view that these are non-discretionary, statutorily mandated benefits, and hence there is a private interest in the receipt of such benefits. And if I may proceed. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, please.
So proceeding to factor number two, the risk of erroneous deprivation through procedures used and the probable value of additional safeguards. Risk of erroneous deprivation is significant. As stated earlier, if the board can end the 90-day period at any moment, then Mr. Bryant or any other similarly situated veteran or claimant has no idea how long they have to gather and submit evidence, request a hearing, or request a change in representation. So if VA fails to provide a date certain, a claimant is unable to choose for him or herself whether to submit additional evidence, because the VA essentially will make that choice for them if the decision is issued before the 90-day period. Again, that constitutes no notice at all. The veteran has no idea, no advance notice of which date the board will decide the case. Therefore, they have no meaningful opportunity to present evidence or to acquiesce and choose not to. And such notice must be clear. It must be fair. Notice cannot be misleading. And notice, again, that is contradicted constitutes no notice at all, since it can be taken away at any time. And the third factor, the VA's efficiency interests, I briefly mentioned this earlier. There's, the VA's paramount interest in veterans benefits cases as a non-adversarial venue here is not that the government shall win, but rather that justice shall be done and that all veterans so entitled receive the benefits due to them. There is absolutely no government interest that I could conceive that could outweigh the need for notice of a date certain by which a veteran and his or her representative must take action or otherwise lose their right to do so.
Now, Mr. Jeff, on the risk of erroneous deprivation, of course, we're talking about the generality of veterans and not a particular veteran, not a single individual veteran. Are you aware of the statistics of whether in most cases VA actually makes a decision before the 90 days is up, or in most cases is it that VA waits the 90 days and more because we know that there are long delays at the board for decision making? Are you aware of any statistics on that?
I do not. I'm not aware of specific numbers. However, I can tell you through many years of experience in this field that in years past, the board always waited the full 90 days. Within the past few years, it has become the complete opposite. I rarely, there are very few instances where I see a board decision that does not come prior to the expiration of the 90-day period. Again, I want to be clear, I don't have specific statistics, and perhaps counsel for the secretary would have precise numbers, but in my experience, it is more often than not that the board decision is issued prior to the expiration of the 90-day period, regardless of whether a veteran and his or her representative has waived that period. And if I may, I'm not sure. I think I heard the time notification, but if I'm incorrect, feel free to continue to ask questions. And if I am correct, then I certainly would like to preserve the remainder of my time.
Chief, can I ask another question?
Sure.
This is Judge Meredith. I just wanted to clarify something from, I believe it was your opening brief where you asserted that the 90-day period was guaranteed by cases like Kucherovsky. After submitting the Williams decision as supplemental authority, are you continuing to assert that, or have you moved away from that argument?
Yes, thank you for that question. So, yes, Williams, of course, has made clear that that 20.1304A only applies to cases initially certified to the board, and it does not apply to cases already remanded by the board. So that case is not applicable here, because what the court determined was that 20.1304A actually does not apply in those circumstances. I am aware that decision has been appealed to the Federal Circuit, but as it stands, that would not be controlling for our purposes here. And this question was also not reached in the Clark decision either, involving remands coming down from the court. So this certainly, at this point, is a decision of first impression, so to speak. And we're asking for the court, in the first instance, to strike down that clause, or until the date the appellate decision is promulgated by the Board of Veterans Appeals, whichever comes first, in cases where 20.1304A applies, when cases are initially certified to the board.
Judge Meredith, do you have any further questions?
I don't, thank you.
Judge Greenberg, do you have any further questions?
Nothing further at this time. Thank you.
Okay.
Chief Judge Bartley, Chief Judge Bartley, excuse me, I'm sorry, for the record, Mr. Just was correct. He did reach the end of his time, and the judge's questions pretty much took an additional 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Block. Thank you, Mr. Just. Ms. Radke, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The plain language of Section 20.1304 unambiguously allows the board to issue a decision within 90 days of notifying an appellant that their appeal has been certified to the board. Pre-amendment 20.1304A explicitly states that an appellant will be granted a period of 90 days or until the date the appellant decision is promulgated, whichever comes first, to submit additional evidence or argument. The fact that 20.1304 does not guarantee a full 90 days was expressly noted by this court in its recent decision in Williams versus Wilkie, and the regulation was specifically upheld and found to be valid by the Federal Circuit in DAV versus the Secretary. What this case then boils down to is
Ms. Radke, this is Judge Bartley. At the DAV, what was DAV actually addressing this issue? I mean, it upheld the regulation to a challenge. I think that it violated 38 U.S.C. 5103, or that there was some inconsistency there. Did it address this issue that we are tackling today about the language allowing?
DAP did not address the issue of due process, but it did specifically note that the entire regulation, including the portion of the regulation that the period is limited to beginning when the claim has been certified to the board for appellate review and ends 90 days thereafter, or when the board issues its decision, whichever comes first. And after that period, it requires the appellant to show good cause for the delay to be allowed to submit additional evidence to the board. So DAB did specifically state that, in short, we find this section to be valid. So while it was addressing whether or not the regulation was valid with under 38 U.S.C. Section 5103, the Federal Circuit did explicitly find this regulation to be valid. It did not address the issue of due process, though, which is what this case boils down to. Did VA afford the appellant his constitutional right to due process? And the answer to that question is yes. The hallmark of due process is notice and an opportunity to respond in a meaningful time and meaningful manner. And while 20.1304 does not purport to guarantee a set amount of time for veterans to submit evidence or argument, the provision must be viewed in light of the entire claims process. It must be viewed in light of the fact that the entire VA legacies process provides first multiple guaranteed times to submit evidence, and the legacy process is always an open record. So in this case, appellant's private interest is his ability to submit argument or evidence for an additional fourth time. But if we're looking at the whole process, appellant was guaranteed already the right to submit evidence and argument when he filed his claim. He was guaranteed one full year to file evidence and argument after the rating decision was issued when he could file his notice of disagreement. He was guaranteed 60 days after the statement of the case to submit additional evidence and argument with his Form 9. And he was also guaranteed the right to a board hearing, which in this case he didn't choose, but he still had that guaranteed right. Where
Ms. Radke, this is Judge Barclay. So you're suggesting that we look at the entire process. Now, you know that we have case law saying, emphasizing the importance of this one review on appeal and differentiating it from the lower level claims process. So should we be looking at the entire process here when we're deciding whether due process was met? Or should we be looking at the period of time in which the appellant, Mr. Bryant, had in this one review on appeal period to submit additional evidence or argument?
The Secretary believes that the entire process, when we're looking at this constitutional question, the review by a board is a statutory right, not a constitutional right, and these regulations didn't need to necessarily exist. The Secretary instead created these regulations.
Excuse me, folks. This is Ken. Counsel for the Veteran has dropped off. The Counsel for the Veteran has dropped off.
Okay, let's wait. We'll suspend proceedings for a minute.
I'm still on the call. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, like I say, Mr. Jost dropped off.
All right.
Well, let's wait and see if you can pick him back up, Ken.
Okay. At this point, I'm just waiting to see if he'll dial back in.
The
This is Judge Greenberg. Maybe he doesn't know he's dropped off. Do you have
I have a new caller here. I'm going to check him back in. Mr. Joust, have you joined us again?
I am. My apologies. I'm not sure what happened there.
All right, Mr. Block, do you have any more administrative you'd like to do here?
Chief Judge, it appears that he's good. Okay, thank you, Ken. Let's just continue with the argument. Ms. Radke, you were saying?
I apologize, Your Honor. I believe your question was, again, whether the Secretary agrees or disagrees whether or not this should be the whole process or just the just looking at from appeal starting at the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the Secretary in this case believes that when we're looking at this constitutional question, we are looking at the entire process and whether or not that veterans are guaranteed or given notice and an opportunity to participate in their appeal, in their claims. As I was saying, the right to review by the board is a statutory right, not a constitutional right, and these regulations were created by the Secretary when for board review, these regulations did not need to be created. So the Secretary feels that would it be a stretch to say if 13.04 and 19.36, that they didn't exist, that that would be a violation of the appellant's due process right. Because the entire system gives multiple opportunities to submit evidence, and because even through decisions by the board, the veteran in every case that this regulation will be applied as a legacy appeal, that the record is an open record. So at any point, any veteran or appellant will be able to submit evidence or argument through the date the board made its decision. So to characterize this as a violation of due process simply because the veteran was not guaranteed a specific amount of time to submit evidence once his claim is docketed at the board is a mischaracterization of the entire appeals process and a failure to look at every opportunity.
Ms. Radke, this is Judge Bartley again. So you're saying that the board can unilaterally on its own without no notice to the veteran curtail an appellant's right to submit additional evidence or argument. Now, are you saying that is there any particular amount of time that must pass between the letter and the issuance, the 90-day letter, or what I like to call the Donnie Hatchie letter, and the issuance of the board decision? Would 10 days be sufficient for an appellant?
Your Honor,
the
notice letter is simply notifying a veteran or appellant that their claim has been docketed by the board. And then it also informs them that they have 90 days or until the board issues its decision, whichever comes first, to submit additional evidence and arguments. So it does allow for them to submit evidence and arguments. It tells them this is a time that if you have anything else, please submit it now. It's the last chance to submit it.
Yes, but as appellant indicated, and as I was just indicating with my earlier question, that there is no specific time under the current language of the regulation, there's no specific time that is actually mentioned, and the day after the letter was issued, the board could issue a decision. In your view, would that situation still meet due process requirements, where the board issued the letter one day and issued the decision the very next day?
Yes, that still would meet due process in that case. It's unlikely to occur
But how would they have any time to submit anything?
They've already had at least 3, if not 4, guaranteed opportunities to submit evidence, as well as because this is an open record, they still would be able to submit evidence throughout the entire claim. In this case, appellant filed his initial claim in October 2013, and the board's decision was issued 4 years later in November 2017. And in this case, appellant had 4 years, 1 month, and 7 days worth of opportunities to submit evidence and argument, but chose not to and didn't submit anything. So,
Ms. Radke, this is Judge Bartley again. So were you saying that if the board issued the 90-day letter one day and issued the decision the very next, that would satisfy due process because before he or she reached the board level, they had numerous opportunities to submit argument and evidence?
Yes.
Is that your position?
Yes, that's the secretary's position. And it's not just 20.1304. It's, for example, after the expiration of this time period, or the board issues this decision, and the next day the veteran discovers this new nexus evidence. There are other regulations that can address this. So Legacy 20.1000 addresses motions for reconsideration, and it specifically allows an appellant to file a motion for reconsideration upon discovery of new and material evidence in the form of relevant records or in the form of service department records. So there are other ways that if a veteran discovers new evidence following this a short turnaround time from the board, that they can have that be addressed. So
this is Judge Bartley again, Ms. Radke. This is Judge Bartley again. So the situation you just posed, you're suggesting that the board could legitimately under 20.1304 leave absolutely no time for the veteran to submit any additional evidence and argument, but this would not be a due process violation because there's an ability to get any board decision reconsidered once it is issued. That's your position?
Or
wouldn't that, I mean, we're talking here about, one of them we're talking about, the Matthews v. Eldridge factors of the government interest and the cost of all of this. So wouldn't that be a more costly, wouldn't your position be more costly to the government, having the board go through, make the decision, and then have the veteran file a motion for reconsideration with new and material evidence, which, by the way, I may say might actually alleviate the issue for someone who was actually submitting new and material evidence, but for an appellant who was merely going to refine the argument or submit additional argument, the reconsideration regulation would really not do that appellant any good.
Well, initially, we're not arguing that the regulation doesn't violate due process because a veteran or appellant can submit a motion for reconsideration. Our position is that the whole process affords notice and opportunity to be heard, opportunity for meaningful participation in the claim. For circumstances where the veteran or appellant, after the board issues its decision, if the board issues its decision before the 90-day expiration, then in those circumstances, there is a remedy. So
this is Judge Greenberg. This is Judge Greenberg. What is the remedy?
Filing a motion for reconsideration at.
So then what's the point of this regulation at all? We have usually a veteran, probably not represented by counsel at this stage. It's a non-adversarial proceeding at this stage. wouldn't the average person looking at 90 day say to himself or herself, gee, I've got 90 days to come up with additional material. Let me start looking. Let me start thinking. Maybe during the 90 days, the veteran discusses it with a lawyer, discusses it with a veteran service organization. Any number of things could happen. Why give a 90-day time frame if at best, as far as the secretary is concerned, it's merely precatory? We can do anything we want without telling the veteran, and we'll leave him to his own devices elsewhere in the statutory scheme. Why even have this regulation?
Well, first, Your Honor, the notice letter that's provided to the appellant and to the representative does explicitly notify them that they don't have a guaranteed 90 days. So if an appellant reads that notice letter as a guaranteed 90 days, that is their misreading of the notice letter and their misreading of the regulation. But going back to your question about the point of this regulation, it's the timely adjudication of appeals, and that weighs heavily in the government's interest. And this court and the Federal Circuit have explicitly noted that the government has a straightforward interest in the speedy resolution of claims, and this court and the Federal Circuit have repeatedly admonished VA for being too slow in processing claims. So this regulation was then created to ensure orderly processing of appeals, and waiting for every appellant full 90 days could create backlogs, and VA is actively trying to reduce these backlogs. And it simply wouldn't be fair to the next appellant in line to force everyone to wait this amount of time, especially given that the letter that is provided to veterans and their representatives is facially clear.
Ms. Radke, Judge Meredith. This is Judge Bartley.
Go ahead,
Judge Meredith.
Okay.
No, go ahead, Judge Meredith.
Okay, thank you, Chief. The appellant here has argued that VA was on notice that he wanted to submit additional arguments during the 90-day period and then issued the decision prior to the end of the 90-day, even though he hadn't responded. Could you talk about whether it's consistent with the non-adversarial process at VA to issue the decision prior to hearing from the veteran or for that period expiring under those circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor. So the representative stated only that in the Form 9 that additional argument will be advanced. The representative did not provide any reason why they would possibly need more than the time could be allowed. Why the representative didn't explain why they could not at that point submit any argument. The representative did not identify any possible evidence that they were looking to obtain that they were going to submit. VA has a procedure where under 20.1304B that a veteran or the representative must file a motion for additional time, and they must file it and explain that with good cause. So for appellant to be stating now that there was the discovery of additional evidence in the form of nexus evidence, which was not argued in his brief or reply brief, still would not demonstrate that there was any harm in this case or that there was a violation of due process or that VA did not comply with its regulations, because they did not identify any reason why they would need additional time, and they did not comply with 20.1304B when requesting additional time to submit argument or evidence.
Ms. Radke, this is Judge Bartley. Would you address for a minute the appellant's argument regarding 19.36 in that it includes this language saying that an appellant would be notified in writing of the time limit, using the word time limit, for requesting, submitting additional evidence or argument? Is the inclusion of that phrase time limit of any significance to the secretary?
So the time limit doesn't set a number of days, and the secretary still believes that 20.1304 does convey the time limit. You have 90 days or until the decision is issued, whichever comes first. And the secretary would also note that this is a newly raised argument that was not briefed by appellant, specifically the argument that 20.1304 renders 19.36 inapplicable. But looking at 19.36 does talk about the time limit, and the secretary still believes that 20.1304A does comply with that, as the notice letter does explicitly inform an appellant and their representative that there is 90 days from the date of the letter or until the board issues a decision, whichever comes first. The secretary still believes that that meets the requirements set forth in 19.36.
This is Judge Meredith. Wanted to circle back to something you said in your brief about 20.1304. You suggested that the appellant misunderstood the purpose of it, that it's not intended to provide a set period of time to submit evidence or to govern when the board may issue a decision. I was wondering if you could share with us what support you have for what the purpose of the regulation is, other than the language itself. Internal guidance, the Federal Register, anything that you can share with us that would support what the purpose of the regulation is?
Not at this time, other than what was already submitted in the brief. But if Your Honor would like more information on that, I'd be happy to submit any additional briefing on that if it's needed.
Judge Meredith, do you have any further questions?
Nothing more from me.
Judge Meredith, do you have any further questions?
I don't. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. And
Ms. Radke, you want to sum up?
Yes, please. If there are no further questions, then to summarize, 20.1304 does not guarantee a veteran has 90 days to submit additional evidence and argument. What this case therefore boils down to is whether the veteran was provided notice and an opportunity to be heard. And the answer to that question is unequivocally yes. The secretary therefore urges the court to affirm the board's November 2017 decision.
Thank you, Ms. Radke. Mr. Just, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The secretary seems to focus their argument predominantly on the fact that there is some process out there, that the process begins and moves forward, and therefore that constitutes adequate notice and opportunity to be heard and satisfies due process requirements. But focusing on the start and the journey really is a red herring, because what we're focused on here is the termination, the end. And if a veteran and his or her representative do not know when that time ends, then the choice has been made for them whether or not they would like to submit evidence and argument, request a hearing, or change in representation. As Judge Greenberg had pointed out, very often through these non-adversarial VA compensation claims, we have a pro se claimant that's on their own, sometimes for years and years and years, before they retain either a veteran service officer or a formal legal counsel and representation from an attorney. And the key here is to make sure that all veterans, whether they're pro se through the process, whether they eventually end up with a representative or counsel, that they're all put in the same position of knowing when their claim and when their appeal will be heard and when their time is up. And without that notice, the process is fundamentally unfair. And again, I want to point out something else regarding 19.36. Respectfully, that is not a new argument. 19.36 is simply what explains the meaning behind 20.1304A. The focus here is whether or not that clause in 1304A violates due process. And when you look at then the meaning behind the regulation, which is instructed in 19.36, that's the regulation that tells us to look at 20.1304A. And that word time limit is essential, because what VA is recognizing is a veteran and his or her representative must be made aware of the time limit. When is the time up? When does the clock run? And as written, if a time limit can mean zero, it can mean no time at all, then the regulation 20.1304A is entirely meaningless. There is no purpose for the regulation, and the entire process then leaves the veteran and his or her representative in an area of complete unknowns as to when they can work on the case, when they can find evidence, when they can submit evidence, or again request a hearing or change in representation. So again, I think the focus here needs to be on the notice of when the process will end. Simply because the process begins and there is a process doesn't mean it is fair through and through to the end. And I am not aware of any venue and any area of the law where a firm date certain is not provided when claimants or their representatives know when they can submit something and when their time is up. And the VA system is especially unique because it is non-adversarial. So it's even more important to make sure that veterans are provided this opportunity and their representatives are provided this opportunity. Chief Judge Bartley, as you mentioned before, the most cost-efficient and effective way for VA to be adjudicating these claims is to simply say, we're issuing the decision in 90 days, that's your time limit. And then once that 90-day period runs, there's no discrepancies, there's no misunderstandings, there's no fog to have to parse through as to how to proceed. You know, requiring a veteran to then file motions for reconsideration with the board and then satisfy a good cause requirement, which then changes the rules of the game, that does not cure any defects in 20.1304A. Are there any further questions? Sure.
Any questions?
Not for me, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. And Judge Meredith?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Just.
May I wrap up, Chief Judge? I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to make sure there was no more questions.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So in conclusion, the court should strike the clause or until the date the appellate decision is promulgated by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, whichever comes first, as invalid and a violation of a veteran's due process rights. And the court should hold that in all cases initially certified to the board and absent an explicit waiver, a veteran shall be provided 90 days following the mailing of notice that an appeal has been certified to the board, during which they may submit additional evidence and argument, a request for a personal hearing, or a request for a change in representation. Thank you.
Thank you both for your argument. The case is submitted for consideration and the court is adjourned. Unfortunately, we won't be able to greet both counsel personally as we usually do, but it was a pleasure hearing the case and a job well done for both of you. Thank you.
The court is in recess.